You're listening to Conversations on WDRT. I'm Eddie Nix, and I'm talking today with prolific musician from Wisconsin, Adam Gruhl. Good morning.
Good morning, Eddie. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm relatively bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I've been, enjoying the emergence of spring. Kind of an up-and-down roller coaster with the crazy hot week, and then man, it felt like, oh my gosh, summertime is here really early. And then this week, you know, we've got the monsoon rains were back, so I've enjoyed doing the gardening stuff. I've been doing a little bit of attempting to get a turkey, doing a little bit of trout fishing, and then doing a little bit of songwriting in there too, so that's been good.
Excellent. Well, you've been spending a lot of time in the Driftless these last couple of years.
I have, yeah.
How do you enjoy the area?
Man, there's so many endearing qualities to this neck of the woods, you know? First and foremost, like, for me, it's just the landscape, you know? There's such a, as everybody in this area knows, there's so many unique elements to this area. You know, growing up, I was always so excited to head out west, you know, to the mountain country, because it's just always, you know, called to me. And I remember my first, you know, memories of the Driftless region were going from Stevens Point, where I grew up, out to the Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming. And the first part of that trip that felt cool was always right when you'd hit the hills in the Driftless. And I remember I'd think, wow, this is like really, there's a difference here. This is different than the world that I know. And it would always kind of get me excited. And then, of course, the next thing you know, you're down in you know, southern Minnesota and South Dakota, and it's flat as could be again. You're like, okay, you know.
What was that? What was that place?
Right. And then through music, through Horseshoes, and then, you know, it was really through like Larry Fest and, you know, some other things, playing at the bookstore, I got to spend more and more time in this neck of the woods and just, you know, really fell in love with not just the landscape and, you know, the spring creeks and the hills, but also the people. There's a certain energy with the people, you know, and as we all know, it's in our entire country, there's a very diverse set of people in the Driftless area or the Coulee region, and I find it all totally fascinating. And you know, people seem to want to help their neighbor, which is a good thing. And I've just found it really attractive. It's been really nice to be down here. And it percolates songs too, like the Springs.
So you have been playing music since you were a kid, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's always been part, you know, for me and for a lot of my friends in the music industry too. It started going to church. You know, I was raised Catholic and, you know, you're singing these songs and like, you know, let's be honest, when you're a kid, you don't really know what the hell's going on, especially with the Catholics, but you enjoy the songs.
Yeah.
And so we were, me and my siblings always enjoyed singing, right? And you know, that kind of got it in my head. And then over time, you know, became more and more hit by various musical styles, of course, country music from just hearing that on the radio. And then I started playing when, you know, I was very young. It's one of my earlier memories was, you know, becoming interested in, you know, getting a guitar and doing music.
And your main band that you're known for is Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. Mm-hmm. And you guys have been doing this how many years?
Well, it's 15.
Yeah.
We started in 2010. We met kind of in late 2009 at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. Mm. And it was kind of like when dogs first meet, you know, and they're not so sure about, you know, hanging out with one another. And then by 2010, we were all friends. And, you know, it started, we were a college band, right? So we would play at house parties and bonfires. And then there was this place called the Northland Ballroom, which is in technically Northland, Wisconsin, but it's kind of by Iola or Scandinavia. And on Wednesday nights, the Northland Ballroom would have a bluegrass jam, a bluegrass open mic. Mm. We started going there, and it became a ritual, basically, for us to go there. It was about 30 minutes from Point. And we would all pile in the cars and go out there, you know, carpool, and, you know, surprisingly not get into trouble on the way there, on the way back. And at some point, a lot of our friends and, you know, we were starting to have fans too, they would all be going out there on a Wednesday. And at some point, it dawned on us, this might be a little dangerous. So I found a guy who had a party bus. And he was amused by the idea that I had brought up. And it was a Wednesday. It's not like it was a weekend where he would be getting hired. So he gave us a really good deal. We hired this party bus every Wednesday night through like 2 or 3 years of college, going out to the Northland Ballroom. And that's what cultivated, I think, who we are. It really like made this scene. It made this kind of family. A lot of the same people were out there, and we, you know, our friends in Sloppy Joe and Art Stevenson and Highwater were always out there, so we were learning a lot of musical stuff from them, and just it became this really cool community. And then of course from there, festivals started booking us, and you know, things like that, and it just snowballed.
And so 15 years, how many records have you put out with Horseshoes?
I got to think about that. Let's see here. There, Another Round, This Old Town, Middle Western, The Ode, Miles in Blue, Four Old Time Sakes. So technically six. Although there's one called Pigtails and Coffin Nails, ooh, which is the seventh. And that was recorded super lo-fi in our first college house. And actually, it's funny, Russ just sent me today. He found the original files from that. We thought it was possibly lost forever, but he must have had it on a hard drive. So maybe we'll re-release that at some point. Or maybe we can even play it at the end of the segment. Who knows?
There you go. You can release it only on cassette.
That's something cool like that. Or a couple tracks on a, you know, 33 or...
Wow. So you play with other bands too. Notably, Rucksack Revolution with the amazing Sarah Voss from mm-hmm. Dead Horses. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, I remember this goes back to college too. I remember walking in a place called the Encore Room, which was at the Dreyfus University Center. And Sarah had been booked for something. I want to say it was like possibly an Earth Day event with her band Dead Horses. And I remember walking in, they were sound checking, and I was like, man, there's something about this woman, you know, and just listening to the lyrics and listening to the songs. And, you know, really, the thing that hit me the most about initially hearing Sarah's music is, you know, it's really cerebral stuff. Like, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's really, really beautiful, you know, look at the human condition, you know. And, of course, her voice is beautiful, too. So, you know, of course, I went up and talked to her, and we immediately had this kind of funky chemistry that we both recognized. And we weren't quite sure what to make of it, you know. And then she, her and I made plans to see one another. She cruised over to Stevens Point from Oshkosh, where she was living, on a rainy night. And, she came over to my kind of college house, and we sat and played, and it was amazing how right away when we started, our voices just had this blending thing. And we both kind of looked at each other like, wow, this is weird. You know, it shouldn't be that quite that easy, you know. And she had had a batch of songs and I had had a batch of songs that were ready. And we recorded them on my little like Boss digital recorder. We've still got those. I've said we should release that too. But anyhow, they sounded really good. And some of those tunes ended up being like Dead Horse's biggest songs, like Turntable. Mm. And on, and Brothers, those were all written, like, in that same moment.
Wow.
So fast forward to, you know, down the road, we thought maybe we should play some shows together, and Sarah dug out the quote, you know, Rucksack Revolution, which is from Kerouac's Dharma Bums, and we're like, well, that's obviously the name. And then we dropped a record. We're really good friends, and we write together, and we bounce things off one another, and just kind of stumble and bumble through life as really, really good friends, and we play as much as we can. And it's hard to say where that road will lead us, because it really feels effortless when we get together and play, and yeah, we'll just see what happens, I guess. Hopefully make another record soon.
And both of those bands, I suppose you'd classify as bluegrass or folk.
Well, you know, bluegrass... The word bluegrass has gotten really interesting. Because, you know, bluegrass is really a specific style of folk music. It's... You know, traditionally it has the three-finger style banjo, which is the Scruggs style, that typical kind of vibe. And, you know, it has a certain structure to it. It has certain tight harmonies that are, you know, there's commonly a tenor harmony and a low baritone. It's like a structured type of music.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, people who play bluegrass really intensely may get irritated, for instance, by horseshoes being called bluegrass. Certainly Rucksack is not bluegrass, like, at all. But, you know, horseshoes is more rooted in old time music, because we have a claw hammer banjo player. We have a fiddle player who plays in, you know, I forget the term for it, but it's the strings are doubled. It's A-E-A-E, you know. And we have a harmonica player, not common in bluegrass music. And Sam, our bass player, is definitely not playing a traditional bass line where it's like boom, 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 boom. He's more like... he's more jazz, you know. Charles Mingus is his big hero, you know.
Sort of maybe lowbrow Americana.
Something like that. You know, yeah, yes. Right. I mean, it's hard to say exactly what it is, you know, and that's, we've always enjoyed that. And, you know, I think that perhaps that's what makes us unique, is not having much of a care about fitting into a box, you know. We've never sounded especially poppy either. Like, that's never really come through, which is kind of funny, you know. But it's always cool and it's always interesting. And, you know, I think really what Horseshoes is five people who play, you know, harmonica, guitar, upright bass, fiddle, and banjo, just playing whatever music comes out of us, but in string band form, you know.
And now your newest project, unless there's one I don't know about, but is Adam Gruhl and the Space Burritos.
Yes.
And you've taken a little bit of an electronic amplified sound with this.
Right. Gosh, it hurts my ears.
You have to wear those little cotton things in your...
I some people do. I'll tell you, my dad, he's not one for the drums. He's like, gosh, it's so loud, you know? And I'm like, well, it's fun. It's fun, loud and fun. But yeah, the Space Burritos was born out of my love and appreciation for, you know, like, kind of country rock and roll jam music. I've just always loved that. And also, like, I had recognized that there was several people in the Midwest scene that I really enjoyed making music with. And I kind of thought to myself, well, what happens if you put this guy with this guy and so on and so forth? What music will come out of that? And so, you know, a gig arose where it would make sense to hire a band. And I hired a group of guys, and I'll be damned, it sounded really cool. And that became a real project. You know, the kind of normal burritos are Andrew Koenig from Long Mama, and he was in the Thrift Tones and Buffalo Gospel, and Nick Lang, who's, you know, like best buddies with him, also in Long Mama and Buffalo Gospel, Maxophone Saxophone, who was like in Heatbox and People Brothers Band, and Alex Ross, he's a Minneapolis guy, I've known him. You know, he played on like a couple Horseshoes tracks and used to sit in with us, and him and I have always just hit it off. Kenny Leiser, who's a, like, you know, almost a legendary Wisconsin musician. He plays with Joseph Huber Band, and, you know, he was in Wheelhouse, and he fiddles, but he can play just about any instrument really well and harmonize incredibly vocally, and he produces music too, and just a great guy. And then Kevin Rao on the bass, who used to be in this band Fat Ma Rooney, which I was seeing when I was like in high school, you know. I remember seeing an Earth Day show over in La Crosse with Fat Ma Rooney and the Smokin' Bandits, and Kevin was on bass, and just kind of wild. But he's a great bass player, great singer. Who am I missing here? I think that's everybody. And then we get like some honorary space burritos, like the great Art Stevenson on harmonica, Augie Doherty from Armchair Boogie will come play, Cheech, Greg Cheech Hall, we've had him play. You know, it's just, it's a great conduit to musical exploration. And, you know, the name comes from partially from the Flying Burrito Brothers, who were kind of the beginning of country, psychedelic, rock and roll. That's the burrito part. And then the space part comes from Space is the Place, which is one of the mottos of the great Colonel Bruce Hampton, who is kind of this mysterious character from down in the South, I think Atlanta area. And his thing was, he had Colonel Bruce Hampton in the Aquarium Rescue Unit, and he had the Hampton Grease Band. And anyhow, his thing was like, he really worked to cultivate originality, and he worked to advocate for musicians on stage being exactly who they are, being themselves, being the essence of what they are in that moment. Which, you know, we all talk about that kind of thing all the time. You know, be here now. You see those bumper stickers. But it's tough, you know. It's tough to pull that off sometimes. And Colonel Bruce was legendary at it. Sidebar about Colonel Bruce is he can supposedly, before he passed away, somebody can enter a room and he could guess their birthday.
Wow.
And he was usually within a day or two. So this guy is trippy. The other thing that's crazy is he, for his 70th birthday party at a big theater in Atlanta, he had all these people who played with him through the years. People like, you know, John Popper and Jimmy Herring from Widespread Panic and Vince Herman from Leftover Salmon and Brandon Taz, this young legendary guitar player, Derek Trucks, and all these cats were there. 70th birthday. Has this incredible night of music. And then during Turn On Your Love Light, the last song of the night, Colonel Bruce, on his 70th birthday, drops to his knees, praises Brandon Taz, who's really young, 15, 16, who's ripping a solo, praises him, goes down, falls, dies.
Wow.
On his 70th birthday, right on stage.
Wow.
So the guy's a trip.
Yeah.
So that's where Adam Grilling the Space Burritos came from. Too much coffee this morning?
Wow, what a story! So let's see, and then there's a couple other outfits you are working with or have formed over the last few years. The High Hawks.
Yep.
That's sort of one of these super grass bands or something.
Well, yeah, more like Americana country rock and roll kind of vibration. Really fun band. You know, that's with the great Vince Herman from Leftover Salmon. And Tim Carbone from Railroad Earth, Chad Staley, who's in the Hardworking Americans with Todd Snyder, Brian Adams, who's in Dead Fish Orchestra and the Great American Taxi, Will Trask, who's in the Great American Taxi. And yeah, that's a really cool thing because, you know, Vince and Tim and Chad, in a lot of ways too, are some of my like musical heroes. You know, they're people who I've looked up to for a really, really long time. I mean, I first saw Vince and Tim when I was 14 years old. So to get a chance to play with them now and record songs with them, it's just been like a pretty wild learning experience, both on the road, but I'd say almost more so in the recording studio. I've learned a lot from them about various things, tactics and approaches. And, you know, there's the technical stuff, but there's also like the, you know, life stuff, you know. They're living the life that I'm living, but they've been doing it for 50 years. So you get to pick up on these things that they throw down, and just really cool mentorship. And we've made a couple records. We dropped one recently, Mother Nature Show, which was pretty awesome, pretty fun record to make. And we're going to be doing, I think we've got 4 not publicly announced dates. We were doing Madison at the Majestic Theater, Chicago, I think St. Louis, and Peoria in October. So
awesome.
Folks are trying to catch that.
And all these projects are, you know, you're kind of, I guess you'd call it a self-made musician in that all these projects you started. You don't have any kind of big management team behind you. In fact, from what I understand, you book everything and produce everything and deal with all the minutiae of the record, the music industry, all yourself. How does that feel? I mean, it must feel great to own it in terms of I haven't, you know, sacrificed my creativity to some other entity, but it must be a lot of work.
Let me put it this way. I'm just getting into gardening, right? And, you know, a lot of my friends know about gardening. And perhaps I've asked some questions, but generally speaking, I've just decided to take it on all by myself. Because that way, I can make mistakes in the process and learn from it. And it's all my fault.
Mm-hmm.
There's something good about that, right? And yes, it's a lot of work, you know, there's no doubt about that, but there's some sense of, it's nice to have some sort of sense of ownership over the entire process. Like then you get to a gig and it's like, well, I decided to do this, you know, and if it goes great, awesome, you know, and if it doesn't go well, then you learn from things. And I think, you know, at the level of being a musician that I am at, it really helps to diversify who you are, both in a musical sense, but also in like a music industry sense. Like, there's ways to learn everything, you know, everything a manager does, you can learn how to do. You can sort that out. It just takes time and energy. Everything a booking agent does, you can learn how to do. It just takes time and energy, some connections, a little bit of luck, yada, yada, yada. Everything a label does, you can figure out how to do. It's just like, what is your bandwidth and you know, what is the degree to which it's pulling you away from the art? Which I would be remiss to say that the music business doesn't take me away from the art because it does sometimes, you know, and like I wish I could be writing every single day, but oftentimes I have to do the email world or make the calls to keep us on the road, you know, things like that. So there's a little bit of a tension there, but at the end of the day, I've been enjoying it. I like the challenge of, you know, sometimes you feel like you're treading water, but hey, treading water is good exercise.
Well, this is Conversations. I'm Eddie Nix, and I'm talking today with Adam Gruhl from Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, and we'll be back in just a moment. So let's change the focus a little and talk about fishing. You're quite a fisherman.
I'm always down to talk about fishing.
Perhaps obsessive, but where did you come across this love?
Man, that goes back, you know, like my love of music, fishing is one of my earliest memories. And ironically, almost fly fishing is one of my earliest memories because I was out there in Wyoming and my family would take, my dad had 2 weeks of vacation every year. He worked for the county planning and zoning. And we would take those 2 weeks or week and a half or whatever and go out to Wyoming, the Bighorn Mountains often, or somewhere out west. And very early on, there was a friend of my mother's that we met out there. And she was a Native American named Kochi. And Kochi fashioned these long tree branches into basically rods and tied line to the end and put like, I can't remember if it was a worm or a fly she caught or something. On those, we would catch these brook trout. We kind of throw these lines. So it was similar to fly fishing in a way, you know, because you had, you know, you weren't like casting a lure, you know. So I remember doing that, and I remember being astonished at how challenging it was to catch a fish because you looked out at the creek. I vividly remember looking out at the creek and seeing hundreds of fish rising and being unable to catch a fish, you know? And that's comical because, you know, now I've come to learn about selectivity and how hard it can be when fish are focused in on a specific bug. Like here in the Driftless right now, we've got caddis popping like crazy. You might throw a bait fish pattern or a, you know, a crane fly or something. They might entirely ignore that because they're so locked in on these caddis flies. So anyhow, you know, that was my early foundation. And, you know, my dad was into fly fishing, so eventually we started doing that too. And, you know, as time has moved on, I think the fly fishing thing has been, to some degree, part of my life as a way to balance, you know, the touring schedule. You know, it's a whole different thing. You're out and about doing the music touring. It's really fast paced. You know, you're just, you know, you don't really have time to just chill and breathe. And, you know, as much as you'd like to take a deep breath and enjoy what you're experiencing, it just, it almost feels like you never really are able to. You're just going. And fly fishing, on the contrary, is like, you know, it slows you down. If you hurry, you always end up tangling your line, or you get a hook in, you're hooking a finger, or, you know, or you trip in the creek and twist your ankle, you know. So you have to be slow and methodical, and that leads to you looking around and enjoying the beauty of nature, and, you know, even like catching up on the thoughts you've been having that perhaps you haven't had a minute to process.
So it's definitely a kind of therapy for you.
Yeah. Yes.
What else do you have in your life that balances that kind of crazy music touring part of your life?
Well, cool friends, good friends. Like you, Eddie.
Oh.
Yep. And, you know, I've been doing, like I said, the gardening thing. And I got the, I'm quick to have a sentimental tear, you know. So I got the cry gene from my mom. And I certainly got the mow gene from my dad. My dad will mow like hell. I mean, he just goes and goes and goes with that thing. And there's times where he's mowing and I'm like, can't quite tell the difference between what's been mowed and what hasn't been mowed. And yeah, I got that too. So I'll do some Zen mowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a religion I'm starting. Zen mowing.
It might have wings. I mean, or legs.
Wings for sure.
So we talked about, you know, the Driftless area. What are your thoughts about Viroqua as a town? You've seen thousands of towns in your touring. Mm-hmm. How does Viroqua stack up to other places around the country? What makes it unique, do you think?
Well, I love Viroqua. I love it for its weird and I love it for its normal. I mean, there's a reason that I'm spending a lot of time down here, you know. It's lovely. It's I don't know if the term is diversity or what it is, but there's a lot of stuff going on. There's like, you know, a lot of folks who seem to be, you know, taking a traditional Wisconsinite approach to their existence, you know. Like, I grew up in Stevens Point, just north of Stevens Point in the country, and you know, there's a lot of that similar, you know, traditional kind of Wisconsin vibe, but there's also some kind of new energy percolating around, different people doing different things with different ideas, and you know, that's fun too and exciting for me to see. I get that, you know, it can be challenging for people with kind of a traditional mindset to experience people with different belief systems and different ideas come into a community. I get how that can be a challenge for people. I mean, I can relate it to myself. I've had those challenges in time, at various times in my life. But I don't know, man. It's really interesting to see it all. See it all come together, and it's going to be an interesting couple years ahead, just seeing the way that the town continues to develop. And I think where there's respect and love and decency and things like that, then a community is always going to thrive. It's, you know, kindness ought to prosper. And when kindness prospers, things go well. You know, just having a sense of understanding and empathy for the perspectives of various people, given their context that they were raised in, and, you know, the way that belief systems are shaped, you know, from your experiences and that of your family and your parents and all those types of things. It's an interesting thing. But I think having for lack of a better word, a diverse, an interesting community, you know, is important.
So another feather in your talented cap is hanging out and performing with and recording two records with Mr. Charlie Behrens.
Oh, yeah.
Great Wisconsin comedian, maybe the top Wisconsin comedian at the moment. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you guys meet? And tell us about that adventure.
Well, we met because I hit him up. We were playing, Horseshoes was playing the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee. And I hit him up asking if he wanted to MC because I realized he lived in Milwaukee. And he was busy that night and he couldn't do it. But he said, hey, I would love to do something though with you guys. I like your music. I'm a fan of your guys' music. Turned out he had like been in like a Grateful Dead cover band in high school.
Really?
So there was some commonality there. And I mean, I just stayed in touch moving forward. And then I think we were at the studio Pachyderm in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. And he said, "Hey, I'm passing through from Minneapolis. Would it be cool if I swung in?" And I was like, "Hell yeah." You know, so he came in and we just kind of messed around and hit it off. And, you know, from there we just slowly became fishing buddies and outdoor recreating buddies. And at some point we decided it'd be cool if I taught him the world of music and he taught me the world of comedy. And so what ended up happening was, you know, we created, now we've got two records. We're going to be working on some other stuff soon. And he started taking me on the road, opening for him, basically doing like 10, 15 minutes of stand-up comedy before he went on. And then we do some songs and stuff through the show. But man, I'll tell you, that's hard. You know, music, at least you've got a guitar in front of you and you can, you know, you don't necessarily have to speak. I often banter, but you can kind of just let the music do the talking. The nakedness of comedy is tough. And, you know, eventually Charlie helped me work through it, but it was an anxious process for me. And I absolutely fell on my face a couple times, which is fine. You know, it'll help you to grow. But, yeah, it's been really cool. And he's, you know, now he's one of my best friends. You know, sure, we do, you know, work some quote unquote work stuff together, but we really enjoy, you know, just recreating and shooting the bull and being buddies.
Well, you've been recording a lot, even as a producer for other people. How's that been?
Well, I love producing. You know, it's it's a joy to help people be themselves and confidently get out the music that they've been creating, the thoughts and feelings that they've been creating, putting them out there, you know. I like helping to be a conduit to that, because what I find is that artists, most artists that at least I've worked with, are, you know, kind of unsure about what they've created. Like almost, you know, humility gone too far or something, where they're like nervous that things are good. And, you know, I hear them and I'm like, this is really wonderful, you know. And in my world of producing, of course, there's the sonics, you know, that you're trying to sort out, you know, the trying to make something sound good with regard to tone and all the recording process and all that. But for me, what I've really enjoyed doing is helping people become comfortable in their own skin with the art that they create. And being able to capture a performance that they're excited about, where they've got that sense of confidence, that sense of, you know, where the flow can roll through them without, you know, that kind of nagging feeling like, oh, I don't know, this isn't good, you know, that kind of self-limiting type thing. And I think the reason that I'm keenly aware of that is from having dealt with that, you know, personally. And these days I've worked through that. I mean, I'm trying to create this bumper sticker that just says "Yar who yar." Because it is the truth. I mean, your voice is your voice. And yes, you can go to voice lessons. You can improve things, you know. You write the way you write, you know. We're the product of all this learning and all these experiences. And you just yar who yar, you know. And it's a beautiful thing, really. I mean, that's what makes us individuals, you know.
At least you talk to Mr. Kappa about that. He'll make you the sticker.
All right. Okay.
So what Wisconsin artists, bands are you got your eye on that you think are pretty extraordinary that maybe most people don't know about right now.
You know, there's a cool thing going on in Milwaukee, kind of, sort of, you know, sort of based around the Cactus Club down there. There's, seems like there's kind of a scene, this kind of, sort of like drive-by truckers-esque rock band called Lady Bird.
Hmm.
And they're cool. I love their music. I listen to them, and then Horseshoes had them open up for us at the Pabst Theater, which was really cool.
Mm.
Dandy Freeling.
Okay.
Awesome. She's also part of that scene in Milwaukee. Really, really talented songwriter, singer, kind of a like a old-timey country vibe.
Mm.
Who else? You know, I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff. I always love listening to Joseph Huber, of course, and hearing what he's up to. Spine Stealers out of Madison. They're talented.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay.
All kinds of different stuff
out there. Yeah. Well, there's certainly a creative scene in Wisconsin. I'm always amazed at what comes out of this area. Well, let's talk about books. What books are you reading, Adam?
Well,
or what have been the influential books in your life?
I've been reading Robert Traver, Trout Magic.
Yeah. You read a lot of trout books, don't you?
I do. It's kind of an addiction, I suppose. Let's see, what else have I been reading lately? Oh, I read the Neil Young biography,
Shaky.
Or,
yeah.
He's so cool.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, I've been thinking about him because he gets pretty fired up about politics. And, you know, mm-hmm. we're in such a strange political moment. And I saw that he, you know, Bruce Springsteen got under fire, you know, from the president for saying some things that were anti the president. I think the president got on both Bruce Springsteen and Taylor Swift. And anyhow, Neil Young couldn't stay out of it any longer.
Right.
And he ran to the rescue of Bruce Springsteen, his friend, and said some stuff publicly. I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, big Neil Young fan, although I went to Chicago to see him. And I was so excited. I pull up there, it's like maybe 20 minutes before doors, you know, and it's almost like the vibe kind of feels funny or something. Nothing, you know, not really finding any reason why the vibe feels funny. Drive like another, you know, 5 minutes down the road, and now it's about time for the doors to open, and there's a sign that says, "Tonight's show has been canceled." I can't find it anywhere online that the show has been canceled. So anyhow, I had to turn around and drive back from Chicago. We were pretty bummed, but I think he is the last night of tour. And
yeah,
well, Neil Young's got to be 70, 75,
upper 70s,
maybe.
Yeah.
So we're going to get another chance. That was with my brother. Me and my brother are going to go see him in Milwaukee coming up. I think it's Friday, Labor Day weekend. So that's exciting. But, what other books? I'm trying to think what else has been recent. I haven't been reading a whole lot, honestly.
Or just influential in your past.
More of a winter thing for me.
Yes.
You know, I've been reading more how-to stuff of lately. You know, it's the fact of the matter is, it's a goal of mine to read more. You know, I'm trying, like, we've got these phones now. And there's so much, like, app crack on there, you know? Like, you sit there and you find yourself scrolling away on Instagram and these... The part of Facebook that's, like, short movies.
Danger.
It's just so wildly addicting, you know? And, like, instead of sitting there at night and reading a book for the last 30 minutes of your day, you scroll away and it can't be good, you know? I mean, well, I think they're saying that it's like definitely very bad for you, but I'm trying to sort that out. I'm trying to like, okay, so what do I have to delete these apps? Is there an app that makes my apps turn off in the morning and the night or something like that? You know, it's a catch 22 because I got to use them, you know, Facebook and Instagram. I mean, I'm supposed to be on like Twitter and Snapchat and all that BS for the music industry. I've got to do that stuff. That's how people learn about shows now. It's like, gone are the days where you just put posters around town.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to be on them, but you find yourself on them. It's like, it really is an addiction, and it's the worst one I've ever had.
Hmm. Well, I am talking with Adam Gruhl from Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. This is Conversations. I'm Eddie Nix, and we'll be right back.
Good.
All right, so we got another 15 minutes, I think.
Cool.
Yeah. Still going?
Yep.
Okay. Welcome back to Conversations. I'm Eddie Nix. I'm talking today with Adam Gruhl, musician of Wisconsin note. Most notably, his band Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. If you were allowed to be in a room with three historical characters for an evening, who would they be?
Oh, man. This one. For a whole evening.
Whole evening, yeah.
Oh man. You know, there's part of me wants to select like some really good people and some really terrible people just to see what would happen.
Well, there you go.
But let's start with just because I think she would be a great hang and would be helpful to be in the presence of anyone. Dolly Parton.
Oh.
Would be the first one.
Okay.
I've got a lot of questions for Dolly Parton.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
Martin Luther King.
Ooh, nice one.
That, and I feel like Dolly Parton and Martin Luther, I feel like they would get along.
They would probably get along, yeah, as long as the food was good.
As long as the food was good. And, who's like the most tyrannical early European, like Napoleon or somebody like that?
Yeah, or Stalin.
Stalin.
Yeah.
Just you know what?
Spice up the party a little.
I mean, yeah, just because like, you know, talk about wanting to gain insight into somebody, you know, twisted.
Oofda.
Twisted vibration.
Yeah, yeah.
I like a weird party if you didn't gather that.
Mm-hmm. So, in all your music touring and being able to play with some pretty legendary cats, was there one sort of moment that stands out as like, I can't believe I got to jam with that guy or that lady?
Man, there's been a lot.
I bet.
There's been a lot. You know, I'll never forget being on stage at Blue Ox Music Festival with the great Bela Fleck and Victor Wooten at the same time. They were sitting in. We had somehow convinced them to sit in. I mean, that was like, and then when you jam with people like that, you know, when you watch it, you can hear how talented these people are. But when you're in the process of jamming with these people, you can feel how talented they are. And it's like their sense of music is like on a whole nother level. So that blew my mind, and it was really inspiring, you know, to learn music more, to be able to get, you know, have more of that feeling. You know, in the world of bluegrass, there's, you know, we've gotten to play with the great Jerry Douglas, you know, on Dobro, the great Peter Rowan. Yeah, you know, there's been so many that I've been really lucky and grateful to do, you know, and they, so much stuff has happened that it's almost, you know, sifting through these memories can be hard in a moment, you know, to kind of comprehend that. You know, Michael Bromberg was incredible. Or David Bromberg, excuse me. That was wild. We did that at the Kennedy Center. That's when the High Hawks played.
Wow.
On the same night as those guys. It was pretty wild. But little memories like that. You know, our spaces, you know, being we were able to do the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, and Red Rocks out in Colorado, which was the Ryman, being able to play the Ryman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one person who is a legend to me is the great Del McCurry. You know, just because he's one of the, you know, the last kind of pioneers of the genre of bluegrass. And he's also just really cool, you know. I love those characters like a Victor Wooten is very much so this way. These characters that are kind of wildly popular, wildly celebrated, but also have somehow retained this ability to be extremely down to earth and also like supportive of youngsters coming up and like propagating that type of kind of good-hearted, fun-loving nature, as opposed to, you know, breeding like, you know, a sense of competition in the music industry. Kind of goes back to Yahoo Yar, you know, because, you know, you felt that as you're in the Midwest when we first started, when Horseshoes first started, we were kind of starting in the wake of like 357 String Band and Trampled by Turtles. We were like one of the only bands, string bands, that were in the state of Wisconsin, let alone the Midwest. Like there wasn't a lot of stuff happening. And eventually, kind of with the the growth of bluegrass, like Oh Brother Where Art Thou propagated bluegrass. And again, I mean bluegrass like vaguely, like string band music, you know, whatever you want to call it, old time bluegrass. So I think Oh Brother Where Art Thou, the movie, played a role. I think Mumford and Sons played a role because they were kind of like a second a folky Americana bluegrass British Invasion thing that happened there. The song Wagon Wheel, you know, from Old Crow Medicine Show, that kind of breaking into the mainstream, the kind of pop sphere. So I think all those things. Well, lastly, I think another piece of that puzzle was the growth of electronic dance music. The growth of EDM, I think, led to a growth in bluegrass because of this kind of push and pull energy. Like bluegrass is kind of the antithesis of EDM. EDM's straight electronic music, comes from a computer, you know, still art, I think. String music comes from wood and wires. You know, you don't need amplification, you don't need electricity. And there was something that happened, like people who didn't like EDM really started to not like EDM and really went towards folk music, you know? So I think all those things happened, and the next thing we knew, there was just tons of string bands and tons of folk music and Americana going on. And it almost felt like there was like a little bit of a competition type thing that started to come about from that, you know? And, you know, that didn't feel very fun.
Well, it's almost like in other aspects of life, the return of the analog way of life, whether it's homesteading versus being in the city or reading books instead of your screen. I think you're hitting on something that's, you know, a little more universal.
Exactly, the push and pull of it all, for sure. I mean, yeah, well, yeah, the phone thing, like we're discussing, is huge right now. I mean, I was telling you earlier that my phone's been, something's been wrong with it for like 6 days, and like a couple friends thought the world was like, you know, ending. But Russell, the banjo player from Horseshoes, thought perhaps I'd perished. Another friend thought I was mad, you know?
Yeah.
It's a funky thing, but, you know, personally, like, I have started to feel increasing amounts of anxiousness and anxiety, I think, as a result of phone-related stuff. It's FOMO, you know, from seeing what's going on out there all the time, or the belief that, you know, we're perpetually accessible. You know, are we supposed to get back to people within an hour? Are we supposed to get back to people within a half a day? Are we supposed to get back to people within the week? I mean, what is this in the world of text messages?
Right.
Yeah. Also, you could just call me. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I think we're both old enough to remember the days of answering machines where you'd come home at the end of the day and hit the button and, oh, there's my messages. Isn't that a quaint idea?
Believe it or not, George isn't at home, so leave a message. Yeah, I know. I'm going to go back to the landline.
So if you had to distill down the Adam Gruhl philosophy of life, what would it be?
Walk in circles and see what happens. you know what? Like, one thing that I've come to realize is that good things will happen if you allow kindness and, you know, try to not be... you can't grab a raging river with a clenched fist.
Hmm.
And so sometimes you just gotta roust about and see what happens, and good things that are made for you will kind of come to the surface. And, you know, I've always had a hard time with letting go of things, you know? And, you know, that's something I'm working on. Some things are made for you and some things are not made for you. And, you know, growing to be okay with that. I don't know if I'm talking about distilling down a philosophy. I don't know that I have a philosophy. I think it's just kind of go for it and try to keep kindness and joy and love at the forefront. And, you know, do you, yar who yar. Yeah, and gosh, music is fun, you know, and it feels good to be out in nature, and it feels good to have community and fellowship, and I just think all those things are really important. It feels good to get your hands dirty, you know, it feels good to create.
Well, thank you very much, Adam, for being here today. This is Conversations on WDRT. We'll see you next time.
Great to be here. Thanks, Eddie.